show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, oh boy, we have a lot to unpack about the Kansas City Royals right now. But first, introductions. Myself, I am your host, Jeff Herr, of course, and with me as always, don't fret, folks, the Ingle has landed.
Mike,
how are you doing on this could be better evening?
yeah, it could be better. Just kind of in a tailspin, kind of in a just a maelstrom of confusion about this team right now. It's kind of weird.
It is quite confusing. And with that, I guess we can just jump right into it. There's been a ton of things happening around the Royals right now, most of which are bad, some of which are good.
Right.
Because we care about you, we want to leave you on a good note. We're going to start with our first segment here on all of the bad stuff. So we'll start with off the field issues, and then we'll move to on the field. So the Royals, when we started this show, one of the bigger focuses was on the farm system because that's all the Royals had. At the time, you know, Hosmer, Moustakas, Duffy, all those guys were still in the farm system. There wasn't anything really at the major league level worth talking about. But the past couple of years, since they've been good, we've drifted further away, not just necessarily us in the show, but as a fan base, from focusing so much on the minor leagues, and it's on the major league team because we actually have something good to focus on. Hey, they're World Series champions. But to bring back the minor leagues for a minute here, the number one prospect the Royals have, Raul Mondesi, has been suspended for 50 games for being caught with performance-enhancing drugs. Now, apparently, apparently the initial suspension was 80 games, but this, I believe it's called clenbuterol, is the name of the drug that is on the banned substance list for the MLB. It's something that's not FDA approved. And apparently it helps blood flow. It helps, helps you breathe. Like, it helps a lot of things in terms of, you know, recovery and working out, not necessarily as dramatic as like a steroids or an HGH, but something that definitely helps. And it's banned by all different types of sports. And apparently it's used a lot in horse racing, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, as many know, Raul Mondesi is from the Dominican Republic, and he was apparently in the Dominican Republic at some point within the past year whenever they administer tests, and he had flu-like symptoms, he had a cold, whatever it was, went and bought an over-the-counter medication in the Dominican Republic, remember, so they're not subjected to the same FDA rules and regulations as the continental United States, and therefore clenbuterol was apparently in this cough syrup that he had purchased. And that's what was discovered. So it was 80 games just based on the clenbuterol. And then after Mondesi was able to prove, hey, look, it's in this cough syrup, they reduced the suspension. But he was never able to prove that he actually took the cough syrup, which I don't know how you could possibly prove such a thing. And so I think that's why it wasn't reduced any further. But still, it was reduced a little bit. So he's got that going for him, which is nice besides that. But
right.
We're in a situation where I don't think Mondesi was going to come up to start the season, or not start the season, just at any point this season, really, beyond just maybe if they really needed him in a pinch and he had to come up for whatever reason. But I didn't foresee him being a part of this team. Obviously, opening day next year, I think he has a really good shot.
Mm-hmm.
But that was depending on how this season went. And now he's losing 50 games, you know, just under half a season for minor league squad. So he's in a position where he's not coming back until, what is it, early July at this point. And he'll have about, like I said, be maybe 2 months after that. So, and he was, I mean, he was on pace for career highs in home runs, career highs in RBIs. I mean, he was really starting to wake up in terms of his offensive production at the minors, which was always the thing that was keeping him from being that elite level. I mean, he's kind of just a notch below those elite level prospects. And that was the one thing that was keeping him there, was the offense. And that was starting to come around. So it's really disappointing to hear this happen, whether intentional, unintentional, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
It happened, and it's unfortunate, and it's probably going to push him away from being able to get any meaningful time this year, and maybe even stunt his ability to start the season next year. Mike, when you first heard it, what was your reaction to Mondesi being caught with PEDs?
Well, like I always have when I'm at work, because this happened at like, I don't know, 2 o'clock or so in the afternoon. I always have like, I have a bunch of tabs for all the stuff I actually do for my day job. And there's one tab that I always kind of have up. That's Royals Twitter list of, you know, key follows for news and updates. And every like 10 minutes might say, hey, you've got X number of new, you know, new tweets. And I might, while I'm on hold, click on that tab and see what's updated and what people are talking about. And it's usually one or two, maybe three or four. You know, you can kind of get an idea. And so I kind of look down and start working on something. And I look back at this tab and I see like 25. And I'm like, oh, crap, something happened. Because that was in like a minute, like right after it broke.
Oh, geez.
And so I started, you know, checking it out. And I was just like, ugh. And for half a second, I was looking, because some people were reporting it as Raul Mondesi Jr., which is a whole different player. And then yes. It was like, oh, here's the beat writers talking about it. I'm like, oh, nope, that's, oh, now he's got a statement. Nope. I mean, it sucks. I mean, it's like you said, unfortunate. It's disappointing is what you said. You didn't say unfortunate. And unfortunate's not really a word I want to rely on too much, because it's one of those things where, yeah, it's probably not the biggest type of performance enhancing thing. Maybe he did take it accidentally, but at the same time, he still took it and still needs to know what he's putting in his body, whether it's, you know, something he intentionally took as a supplement or whatever, or if it was actually in the cough syrup. I mean, we don't know. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt. It's just, it stinks that, you know, he ends up in this situation that could have easily been avoided. Clint Scholes was in Omaha today at their game and ran into JJ Piccolo. And later in the show, we've got a little bit from JJ about the protocol for them. But the basics of it is that a player, wherever they are in the organization, minors or majors, they need to check with the trainers if they're going to be taking anything like that. You know, and he didn't do that. And maybe that's because he took it in the Dominican, but still there are academies down there. There's no excuse to not check it out. So that's kind of the worst part of it, that it could have been easily avoided altogether. It is, at least he gets a break that they cut 30 games off of it. So that does give him another month to play. He'll get to play July and August. So at least you can kind of finish off the Double-A season. He's still going to be working with trainers and you know, working on different things at kind of the instructional facilities, so he can still participate in that, but, you know, no game action, and it's going to cut short or at least limit a promising season that, you know, he's showing some power, he was showing some good speed, and it's important for him to be out there on the field, because I think the Royals do expect him to be up fairly quickly. They've got him on the 40-man roster. They used him in the World Series. So that ends up being an important player, not only as a prospect, but as somebody that they kind of have their eye on as at least playing second base, maybe some of next year, and possibly jumping over to short after Escobar leaves after 2017. So, you know, this is a couple of months that he doesn't get the opportunity to get out there and play and continue to work, and it does change the timeline on him. And it was a mistake that was completely avoidable, that, you know, he didn't need to get involved in, and, you know, that part really kind of stinks.
Yeah, I think that's what hits home about why it's so disappointing. for me is that this is something that's completely correctable. You know, if he had, I don't know, I can't think of a scenario where you'd be suspended for 50 games for something out of his control. But the idea that, you know, I think you have to kind of disassemble the parts of this argument into a couple different things. And one being the Major League Baseball and the steroid policy that they have, the frank discussion that we've, as Sam Ellinger has pointed out many times, that we've never truly had about PEDs, about the spot that performance enhancing drugs has in all of organized sports, and then Raul Mondesi's actions. So the Major League Baseball has these set of rules, and they have a strict definition. They've got all these things on a list, and if you're in violation, here's your punishment. That's it. So if you want to argue that portion of it, then that's fine, but that's not something we're necessarily going to argue here, because it doesn't really matter in the context of what happened, because you have to argue then with whether Raul Mondesi is subject to these rules, whether he likes it or you like it or anybody likes it. So he has to understand that, and he has to take the proper precautions, just as, you know, everyone says he has to, just like you said, he has to know, he has the responsibility of what goes into his body, and he has to know that, and to know that even though he may not want to, he may want immediate cough relief or whatever, he needs to take that extra step, because everything could possibly have something. And it, you know, it's not like they're not told these things. You know, they are, yeah. They are told anytime you put something in your body, if you're not sure, ask, we'll tell you. You know, I mean, it's not hard to, I'm sure they still sell NyQuil and DayQuil and everything in the Dominican Republic, and I don't think those have performance enhancing drugs in them that would get him suspended. But for whatever reason, he chose this one particular drug that had this banned substance. You can't do that. And that's, so you have to look at it from those angles. And that's what's so disappointing, is that he knows, just like we do, that the MLB has these rules. And whether it was carelessness, whether it was laziness, whether it was honest mistake, whatever it was, he didn't abide by it. And now, like you said, it's a promising season that, I mean, you basically can chalk it up to being lost, because, yeah, he's going to come back in July, but it's basically going to be another spring training for him right when he comes back. He's going to need roughly a month, probably a couple weeks to a month, to really get back up to speed after that much time off. And then you've only got like a month of the season left. And what's he really going to show in that month? And it's just really unfortunate that you got to, you know, that's kind of the way it is. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They might pull him up in September as a call-up, just because he is already on the 40-man. They've already optioned him and used that option, so they may as well, just to get him more time. But, you know, it's still, that's 50 days. That is a lot of, or 50 games, not 50 days, 50 games that he's just not going to be able to do. That's 200 plate appearances that he's not going to get to see, you know, double-A pitching, or if he kept hitting, triple-A pitching. So that it's, you know, it's a silly mistake, and he's not alone. It's not just Mondesi. There's a lot of players lately in the first month and a half of the season have been dinged for these things, and it's a league-wide thing. And, you know, the big picture, it's good, because you do want to ensure that you have a clean game, that, you know, nobody is breaking the rules, and they're paying more attention now rather than paying no attention 15 years ago. So that's a positive in the big picture. It's not a good thing for the Royals right now, because their top prospect is going to be on the shelf, and it's his own problem.
Yep. So moving on from that, we've got some other news, some more shakeups in the organization. These not necessarily as bad as that one, but Mike Moustakas, when we recorded, that might have been like the first or second game that he was held out for his thumb thing. Was that right?
I think so.
We recorded last. So he was they were still kind of figuring out what his situation was. Originally it was like a jam thumb.
Yep.
And so it was just kind of a precautionary, letting him get it back. And then it took like an MRI, and he's got a fractured thing going on And so what I can't remember what the exact terminology was.
It was it was some small bone in the by the thumb. Some just fracture of that. So I don't remember the name of it, but it was a weird medical name.
Yeah. Anyway, it's broken fracture, whatever it is, yep, preventing him from playing. He's on the 15-day DL. So Justin Cuthbert was called up, deservedly so. You know, Morse, of all the prospects in the Royals system, you know, obviously Justin Cuthbert's a good fit for calling up for Mike Moustakas to play the same position, but he's also probably having the best season. So of the Royals ready prospects, or the major league, close to major league ready prospects, and having a really good start down in AAA. So they called him up and he's performed pretty well. The other night he had just a fantastic defensive play,
mm-hmm,
and a diving stop at third base and made a great throw to get the back. I can't remember who it was, but and it was, you know, it's really kind of funny because coming up, he was, when I was doing minor league stuff for Kings of Kauffman, he was kind of my first love of the second wave of prospects because he was, you know, 18 years old and he was in low A ball and he was just mashing home runs every game, it seemed like, when he first came up, which was near the end of the 2011 season, I believe. Because when he was before he turned 18, he was just in all like the rookie leagues and Dominican leagues or whatever the, because he's from Venezuela, I believe.
He's from Nicaragua.
Nicaragua. Yeah. That's,
so he probably would have been in the Ven. I don't have it in front of me what
yeah, he was leagues,
but yeah, he was coming in
those
up.
Types of things. And so when he finally came up into the farm system proper, if you will, he started mashing home runs, and then he kind of tapered off for a year or two, and everyone was still kind of like, oh yeah, he's got some talent, but it's, you know, whatever. And the arguments they had, or I don't want to say arguments, but the line on him for his defense was very similar to Moustakas. Oh, kind of a bigger frame, slower feet, got a really nice arm, can make all the throws, but questions about his range, about his movement, that kind of a thing. And, you know, so far he's, I don't know if he's quite where Moustakas is, who I would consider a plus defender at this point, but he is definitely he's shown the ability to be a major league average third baseman. And if he can add above average or average skills offensively, then that's a perfectly fine replacement for Mike Moustakas in the next couple of years when they'll need to find one. And he hit a home run last night. And yeah. I mean, he's performed pretty well. I mean, what have your thoughts been so far on Cuthbert as you've seen him?
I remember last year when he came up briefly, his numbers weren't good, but he looked like a guy who belongs. And he's come in now. He's got to hit every game since he's been called up. So including that home run, and that's after a start in Omaha where he had 7 home runs and like 29 RBIs in 25 games. So, I mean, he definitely deserved some kind of a look. It's, I guess, fortunate that you have him ready when Moose gets hurt, you know, rather than going with Christian Colon at third, who I don't think is a very good third baseman. I think he's better defensively as a second baseman, and not much with the bat. So Cuthbert, you get a shot to kind of see what he's doing, and he's performing so far. And you know, I'm with you. He's one of my favorite guys from that kind of, you know, all the buzz was always on Hosmer Moustakas, and then they signed Cuthbert at like 16 years old when he was, you know, back in 2010. And so now he's been around forever, but he's only 23. So there's a lot of growth to go. You know, he's still got some potential to maybe do something.
He's still on the upswing towards his prime.
Yeah, and you know, now he gets an opportunity to play for a little bit. I mean, we don't know how long Moose is out. The Royals hope it's 15 to 20 days. The kind of average for hand injuries can be up to about 40. So I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But he gets an opportunity to play. He can play some first base. Not that he's probably going to be asked to. But, you know, I don't think he's going to do much beyond third. And, you know, right now while Moose is around or on the DL, he's not going to need to do anything else. But it would be nice to be able to find some kind of a spot for him. I don't know if that spot exists on this big league team right now. So that's kind of unfortunate. But if he does something like he hits 300 for a month and has five or six homers after it, they're going to have to find something for him. I don't know how you do that, but they'd have to, you know, figure it out one way or another. But, you know, I guess it's bittersweet because Moose was having a good start. So he's out, but Cuthbert being able to step in is a nice thing. It's pretty fortunate.
All right, so with Cuthbert coming in for Moustakas, that doesn't spell the end of kind of the roster shakeup after the slow start the Royals have gotten on. And there's one of them, which I think a lot of people have kind of seen coming, but it's now been made official. Not a full-on takeover of the second base position for Christian Colon, but there's definitely been a admission by management, specifically Ned Yost, saying, hey, Christian Colon is going to start to get a lot more playing time. And this is a very good thing because, I mean, Omar Infante at this point, I mean, the dude looks like he's about to fall apart. We thought that the elbow surgery that he had in the offseason might be like, hey, you know, if he finally comes into a season for the first time since he's been with the Royals fully healthy, maybe he takes off. And hey, that first couple of weeks, it actually looked pretty good. He was hitting very well and, you know, one of the better offensive performers on the team. And then he's taken a nosedive since. And he can't hardly move to his right, let alone field and throw to his right. And it's just, he's old and he's really starting to show it. And the contract that was much maligned at the time doesn't look any better at this point. So unfortunately for him, it looks like his career is probably winding down. And so I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to game the system a little bit. And I say the system, not really anything in anything specifically, but just try and make it so they can give him lots and lots of rest, multiple days in a row possibly. So when he comes in, he is fresh and rejuvenated, and he can play a couple games at 100%. And then normally if he starts to kind of fall down after two, three, four games in a row, then they bring in Colon for a couple days and give him an extended rest and try and extend him that way. You know, you saw it's kind of a similar thing to how the Chiefs handled Tamba Ali, actually, if you really think about it, where, you know, Ali has always been a very good pass rusher, and they've drafted and signed a couple other pass rushers since, you know, obviously Justin Houston, but I'm talking more about like Dee Ford and Frank Zumbo and guys like that. And so they can leverage those guys and bring them in and allow Tamba Ali to sit out and not play as many plays as he might normally, which gives him, you know, kind of extends his season, or more I should say, extends his peak during the season. And I think that's what they're trying to do with Infante. So I'm happy about it. We've kind of wanted that. We were talking about it in training. We were talking about it as something where we were disappointed Colon got off to such a slow start, because I think they were ready to pull the trigger after Colon's performance in the World Series, where he hit the game-winning hit in Game 5. And they were ready, I think, to pull the trigger at that point, make him the starter, and just keep Infante as a backup. But it just – he didn't grab a hold enough, and he performed poorly, that they said, well, we'll just go with what we know at Infante. So I, for one, am glad to see that they're kind of shifting towards that. Mm-hmm. And Colon has shown, you know, he's shown he can be league average to maybe slightly below league average, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he can be a little better than replacement level, which if that's the weakest spot on your team, that's okay. And considering what Infante has done lately – like, you watch him throw, my gosh, I mean, that's the easiest throw in the game. I mean, easiest relative to other baseball throws.
Right.
It's still pro baseball. It's still Major League Baseball. So I'm not taking anything for granted there. But it's a 70-foot throw sometimes, and he either has to take too much off of it to make sure it's accurate, or, you know, to even have any zip on it, it's pulling Hosmer off. I mean, there have been multiple times where that happens, and you just can't have it from your second baseman. I figured his elbow, you know, that surgery, I figured he'd be healthy, he'd be okay, but, you know, it's just, you know, time wins every time, and that's just kind of what's running into
time
it.
Time is undefeated.
And at least they're fortunate that they have Christian Colon, who is at least startable there, and they can split the time, or Colon may even start seeing more of the majority of it, and that maybe allows Infante to maximize what he, you know, his efforts on the field. He doesn't have to hold it back, knowing if he's got a day off the next day. You know, maybe that's a thing that kind of ends up working out for him. But, I mean, ideally, you'd still want to have, you know, probably a lot of other second basemen there. But this is making the best of the situation they have for now. It's just kind of what they can do. And you still have Cologne around who can play short if he needs to, can play third if he needs to, and you can put Infante at second. So you maintain that utility position too, even if you need to move some guys around in the middle of a game or something. So it's doing what they can and trying to eke out as much value from both guys as best they can, even though neither are really suited to be an everyday guy right now.
Yeah. And the shakeups, they don't stop there either. So
yeah,
we've got
a lot of shaking
as needed, as necessary. The Royals have shaken up their rotation pitching staff a little bit. Chris Young on Monday night — we're recording this on Wednesday, May 11th, by the way, for frame of reference there. So on Monday night, which would have been May 9th against the Yankees, Chris Young gave up 5 home runs. Now
they're all solo, but
yeah, if you're the kind of person that this makes you feel better, I think at least 2 of them would probably not have been home runs at Kauffman Stadium.
Right.
For what it's worth.
So he only gave up
what it's worth.
3, yeah.
Yes, only 3 in 2 1/3 innings or whatever out there. So he is not having a good season, and he is admittedly having some forearm issues, and he's not he doesn't have the feel for his ball. His ball doesn't have the life that it did last year, because we talked about it before when he would have his big strikeout performances. If you throw 87 and you've got your command and the ball has good life, it's still really tough to hit. Hitting a baseball is incredibly hard. And so if you can have a ball with good command and good life, and you're still, even if it's only 87 to 89, you can still be effective. And that's what he was able to do all of last season. Not this season, because he doesn't have that command. He doesn't have that life. And it's part of because it's forearm. And he's going to take an MRI. I have not heard the results on that. Have you heard something I haven't on that?
No, I haven't yet. I'm not sure when. I mean, he was probably going back, I don't know, probably yesterday, or maybe he went back today, because they made that announcement somewhere in the afternoon. So I imagine he might have not gotten back until last night, or maybe this morning or midday or something. So they may have done it today. I don't know. But it's going to be something where he gets bumped from the rotation and Dylan G is going to take his spot. So we saw G, who came in relief of Chris Young, and he threw 5.1 innings, gave up only 1 run. And he's looked really good all season when called into this long relief spot. So I guess that's a really good person to have available if one of your starters goes down, because he can almost just step right in. Probably, might have a shorter leash in his first start when he starts in place of Young. But after that, I mean, they might be able to get him up to 90 pitches, and maybe he fits into the rotation and kind of helps stabilize it a little bit, because it's very, very wobbly right now.
Yeah. And I'm kind of looking forward. Mike, Dylan G was one of the guys that you had kind of picked and earmarked at the beginning of the season to watch out for as possible one of those Royals reclamation projects. So maybe if Chris Young needs to work some things out and spend some time in the bullpen, if he's assuming everything checks out on his MRI, then, and Dylan G is that guy, can kind of step in and give you 5 to 6 innings of 2-run baseball on a pretty consistent basis, then, you don't really lose much if that's your trade, because that's pretty much what Chris Young gave you. So, I mean, that's the hope right there, is that that's what Dylan G can give you, because right now the rotation is driving the struggle bus on fire,
really
into a vat of gasoline right now is what's happening. And Ian Kennedy is the only person standing waving as the bus drives by, and Yordano Ventura is driving that bus, not the good bus, not the one that Lorenzo Cain drove last night when he hit 3 home runs. Ventura driving the bad one, where he is literally walking more than any other person in baseball. And the only person who's even on pace with him in terms of walks per 9 is Chris Medlin. So this is a bad situation for the Royals. And what they had gotten the past 2 years that had made them so successful was pitchers who were able to go. You know, I mean, innings was always a concern, but they had enough depth in the bullpen that it wasn't a huge issue to this for those couple of years. But they'd at least be, you know, in that five inning, six inning range, and then you get a good night, you get seven, maybe eight. And it was just one thing they were able to do: attack the zone, throw strikes, not walk people, and let the defense pick them up. But they've been walking people like crazy. I don't know what the hell's going on. Just walking all over the place.
It's pretty much the whole staff. All of the starters except Kennedy.
Yeah. And so it's coming back to hurt them, you know, because whereas last year, maybe Ventura would give up a solo home run, not a huge deal. This year, he walks the two guys in front of that person and he gives up a home run, and now you're down three. And it's like, well, this, you know, what the hell? And, you know, Volquez, who's normally very good at pounding the zone, you know, he's had his moments this year where he's looked just as good, but he's also had some really odd kind of just not very good games. And, you know, Ian Kennedy is the only guy that's been able to really pick them up every few games. And he's even had a bad game, you know, mixed in. And this early in the season, when you got that many things going wrong, it just makes for just a huge mess.
It really does. And the thing is, like, last year and the year before, the approach was like, if you can get six innings out of your starter, you're feeling okay with this Royals team, with the bullpen and the depth that they have. That's okay. If it's five, you can kind of get around that. But guys now, they're not even doing that much. I mean, Medlin is averaging four innings a start. Young was averaging under five a start. Even Ventura is at five innings per start. And the last couple times through, each of Ventura, Medlin, and Young have been under five innings, and you can't do that. I mean, what you end up with is the situation now where, all right, well, Dylan G has to, you know, pick up the slack the other day. And thankfully he pitched well because it saved the rest of the bullpen so they could pick up Medlin the next night. And tonight Ventura is not as sharp as you would hope, but he's at least kind of getting through the innings now. So that's at least something. But it's still a situation where you can't go through and have one guy or maybe two guys who can get you through six innings. It's just not something you can sustain. On one hand, these guys are coming out not because it's like, okay, they're, you know, if you're getting outs but you're throwing 25 pitches an inning to do it, that's one thing. But it's they're walking guys, they're giving up hits, they're not, you know, hitting their spots, they're not commanding the ball. You know, so many different things, and you're giving up runs, you're giving up hits, and then you have to come out. And so your team is behind all the time. And that's been the biggest thing in the last couple of weeks, where, you know, they've gone 3-11. They were 12-6 and they're 15-17. And that's just a lot of that hangs on the starting rotation. I mean, you, just going down the line, Chris Young has 3 out of 7 starts where he's pitched more than five innings. He's gotten through the sixth inning one time. Chris Medlin, half his starts, 3 out of 6, he's been under five innings. One time he's gotten through the sixth inning. Ventura started out really, really well, but he's still only gotten through the sixth inning twice. You know, Volquez has generally been good, but two of his last three starts have been bad. And Kennedy had one rough one in California, or LA, California. What is it, 1989? I'm calling them the California
Angels. California
Angels. What the hell? But he's been really good. And you know, that one start, it wasn't even that awful. It was just rough for him. So it's, that's kind of what you're relying on, is Ian Kennedy and a bunch of guys, and to a lesser extent, maybe Volquez. You know, and that's what you're trying to see. So if it's, you know, guys are going to have a bad start half the time, you can't sustain that. If they're going to have a bad start, 1 out of 6 or 1 out of 7, okay, that's reasonable. That's, you know, it's Major League Baseball, and guys aren't always going to have their best stuff. But, you know, you can't go through and have half your rotation or three-fifths of your rotation struggling, leaving early, giving up runs, and making your team start the game down 3-0, 4-0, you know, and give you only five innings to make it up. And it's just, it's really tough to watch, is what it comes down to. It's difficult to put up with. And then you're taxing the bullpen after that, you know, so you end up stretching guys out that maybe don't need to, or you're using guys on days you didn't plan to use them. So it throws a lot of things off, and in the process, you're still losing the game. So it's the biggest issue right now So hopefully G fixes it. Medlin's going to get his next start. It's going to be in Kansas City. Maybe that's better. It's against the Braves. Maybe that helps. But if he doesn't, you know, there aren't a ton of options. Brian Flynn has been starting in the minors, and he's pitched okay since he's been up. But, you know, he's still not somebody I think you rely on. Danny Duffy would be tough to do, but he'd be in that mix too. He's only thrown 29 pitches as his high in out of the bullpen this season, so he would need to get stretched out. And that just compounds the problem, because now you have a guy you want to put in the rotation, but you know he's probably that first time not going to give you more than four innings just because he's got to work his pitch count up, you know, to get into the 50 or 60. Or because it's Duffy, that might be three innings. You know, you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So they're in a tough spot, and I don't know what the answer is outside of doing another transaction or kind of flipping guys through the minors and just trying to keep a guy in there and you know, just doing that carousel that they've done a couple of times here and there where you bring up a guy, you option him back down the next day, bring someone new up, and always have a fresh arm from the minors. But even there's only so many times you can do that because you have to wait 10 days for that next guy to come back. So it's a tough game right now. And if you can't pitch and you're behind from the get-go, you know, there's not a lot you can do to come back. And, you know, that's how you end up in a 3-11 stretch.
Yeah, and you look at last night as a prime example, last night being the May 10th game, which was Salvador Perez's birthday yesterday. It was my birthday yesterday. And Lorenzo Cain decided to show up for that. Hits three home runs, 5 RBIs. Waking up out of his slump, and which he's been doing for about a week now. But regarded 3 home runs, Chester Cuthbert had 4 home runs, and this is against Masahiro Tanaka, who I think had only allowed more than 2 runs maybe once in a start this season so far.
Not even
I think all
and
yeah,
two home I, runs total.
Yeah, and I mean just been pitching really well, and the Royals just lit him up, and then they even got a run in the 8th inning off of Andrew Miller, who, by the way, according to the pundits who vote for these things, was actually a better reliever than Wade Davis last year, based on the fact that he won the best reliever in baseball award, whatever they call that. Is it still the Rolaids thing?
I think.
Or is that different?
I don't know. I'm not sure.
It's the Mariano Rivera Award, I think, but I don't know. I can't remember if Rolaids. Maybe that's just the one, the per week one, the reliever of the week. Whatever.
He beat Wade Davis.
Yeah, people thought that he was better than Wade Davis last year, and they got a run off him, and he had gone like 20 innings without giving a run, and they lose. If you would have said, okay, the Rose are going to hit 4 home runs, Kane's going to hit 3 of them against Masahiro Tanaka, 1 run off Andrew Miller, you'd be like, oh, they're going to crush the Yankees. This is going to be a fun game to watch, and it actually was, but they end up losing 10-7. How does that happen? Kelvin Herrera gave up a run for the first time in a long time. I believe he had the longest scoreless streak in the majors. And then, you just had just an awful, awful game pitching wise. And it's just like, come on. Mm-hmm. What are the Royals got to do at this point? You know, last year, the Royals, we mentioned how frustrating it must have been to play against them because it was just like everything goes their way. And they, a lot of that was them. They made it go their way because they did a lot of the little things right. And this year, it's just not going their way. And, you know, there's still, I think if you look statistically, I don't know if there's an appreciable difference talking defense and different things like that from last year. There's still some of the fewest errors in the league, still some of the most defensive runs saved. I mean, they're still playing good defense. And in terms of striking out, they're still one of the top five or so. At least last I looked, they were third hardest team to strike out in baseball. But it seems like those problems are so much worse. And, of course, it seems that way because they're losing. So it's rough right now to watch the Royals.
It really is. And a lot of people, the easiest thing to go to, and I've seen some radio guys do this, and I've seen, you know, comments and things like that where, oh, they're not trying. They don't even care. I think it's the complete opposite. I think they care quite a lot, and they're trying very hard. And I think sometimes you get too amped up. You're like, okay, here, we're going to make the play. And, you know, Elcides Escobar booted an easy play. I think, you know, there was an element of trying to not make the mistake there where he made that error in the eighth inning that allowed that to happen, where, okay, he's, you know, he boots this ball that he normally will make. I mean, we've seen it before where he, you know, messes up a routine play, but it's, you know, generally he's going to make that play. And it just seems like that. And, you know, saw Alex Gordon airmail the throw to home, which that's pretty rare. You know, I think it's just they're trying really hard to get things going. And, you know, there's just moments where that doesn't work, where, you know, if you're trying too hard, you're wound up. You're not just being relaxed and flowing and playing. You're putting too much stress on everything. And it seems like that's kind of running into the, you know, what they're running into right now. It's difficult to watch because, you know, it's not the same as last year where the breaks aren't coming. And, you know, when they don't get a break, it's like karma. It's like we're paying the bill for the good luck of the last 2 years, and it's very frustrating. But a lot of it is their own thing. I mean, it's not, you know, there aren't baseball gods really. So
yeah,
it's just what is happening. And sometimes you get that bounce and sometimes the hits don't fall. And, you know, I guess if this is the evening out of a 3-year stretch where a lot of things went right for two of them, that's, I guess, what it is. And, you know, that's tough to watch, but, you know, that's what it is. It's baseball. And all they can do now is adjust and try to be better in whatever other games and series they have to play the rest of the year. And hopefully guys kind of pick it back up and they get back on the same track that they've been the last couple of seasons.
Yeah. And a lot, I think the positive is that there, a lot of these things are correctable, you know, and you just look at Lorenzo Cain, for an example. People were like, has he fallen off, you know, that quickly? We've seen age take people before. We kind of mentioned, you know, we didn't really think on the show that that was what was happening, but that it was something to keep an eye on because we have seen stranger things happen. But, you know, he has come back this week and he's looking more like Lorenzo Cain of last year, who was the MVP candidate, more than the Lorenzo Cain of the first month of the season hitting barely 200. So these things are correctable, and I think part of it is you can really distill a lot of the Royals' success. I shouldn't say that, but you can really look at some moments as part of the Royals' success the last couple of years. So, for instance, the Jose Reyes play in 2014 when
the Royals won that.
Should have been the third out, committed an error, Royals won the game, and they kind of took off from there, never looked back, made the World Series. And then 2015, there were so many in that first 2 weeks of the season with all the comebacks they had and all the great wins and everything and all the celebrations and then the off-the-field stuff that even galvanized them even more. And so, you know, there are these so many different things, and I think the Royals themselves know that that was a big part of their success. And so I think they're all looking for that moment, you know, and I think that's exactly what you were talking about. They're trying too hard. And that is, I think it kind of feeds into that where, you know, Gordon's trying to get that, to nail that guy at home like he's done 100 times, literally, over the past few seasons, you know, more than any other outfielder. And he airmails it, which is very rare for Gordon because, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if even someone like Gordon, and we've seen that before from Gordon, not necessarily from a defensive standpoint, but just from a point of him really putting pressure on himself to kind of pick the team up. And so throwing somebody out at home to, you know, really have an impact on the game, that could be something he's putting pressure on himself to do, and it causes them to change his release point ever so slightly, and he airmails the ball a little bit. And same with, you know, Alcides Escobar. How many consecutive days in a row did he have a web gym last year? And maybe he's trying to do that to pick up the team. It's just so – I think a lot of that kind of feeds in to your point of trying too hard versus this kind of – I don't know what you would say, crotchety notion that, oh, they're just resting on their laurels because they're, you know, World Series champions. I mean, Buster Olney, I heard him on the radio – a couple weeks ago, kind of at the beginning of this Royal slump, or no, it was even before the slump when they were still like 12-6, and he was asking about the Royal, or they were asking him about the Royals, and he said, you know, every World Series champion I've been to their training camp for the last however many years, the next year. And he goes, to a man, there was always some feeling of a hangover. And he goes, even the Mets this year, who, you know, there was – I mean, Terry Collins had to call a meeting before the season to make sure they didn't have a hangover. Buster Olney said no hint of the same type of hangover with the Royals. So this is a very focused, very in tune group of players who love to play baseball and are focused on playing baseball.
And they love to do it together.
Absolutely.
That's the team thing.
And so this idea that, oh, the Royals are just kind of cruising, you know, I don't know that there's a ton of merit in that. And I think it just comes more to things just aren't working out for the Royals, you know. And you talk about, like you said, if this is paying the bill, I guess so be it. But, you know, even to when you talk about, you know, the Dayton Moore magic with a lot of the signings and everything, you know, the Ian Kennedy is looking pretty good so far.
Yep.
But the Joaquin Soria signing, you know, he made somebody great, whether it's Ryan Madsen in 2014, whether it's Chris Young last year. I mean, whether it's any of these guys, or Ryan Madsen was last year, wasn't it? Scott Frazier was in 2014, who had a pretty, you know, decent season for him. And it's just like now the Joaquin Soria thing, which seemed like more of a no-brainer than the other ones, has kind of not had the best results so far. So it's, you know, Royals aren't perfect. Dayton Moore's not perfect. But I think the positive we can take away from this is it's correctable. Yordano Ventura is better than how he's been pitching. Edinson Volquez is better than how he's pitched the last two out of three starts. Chris Young is better than how he's pitching. You know, yeah. Joaquin Soria is better. I mean, Kelvin Herrera and Wade Davis are still pitching incredibly well. Luke Hochever is still pitching very well. So, and there's a lot of things that Alex Gordon is a better hitter than the way his statistics show right now. So, I mean, there's things are correctable, I think. And that's, if there's a bright side for me, Mike, I think that's it right now.
Well, the rotation can't get much worse. So
that's actually very true.
That's something. Then again, that also brings up the Buddy Bell corollary that don't ever say it can't get worse.
Never say it can't get worse.
You know, I mean, the main thing is just like, I don't want them to start struggling so much that they do start going through the motions, because there's got to be a point where you do get frustrated playing and not having things work out. You know, I mean, I don't know if that's a sustained losing streak that does that. I mean, they've had issues in the past. I mean, they were under 500 in July in 2014 and ended up doing just fine the rest of the way. So, you know, they are still a team that I think can do one of those 8 out of 10 winning streaks, or even the fabled 15 out of 20 that everybody scoffed about with Dayton Moore, and they did it like each of the last 2 years. It's just like, okay, fine. You know, until this team is smoldering and ashy on the ground, then okay, they still have some life in them. So I still believe. It's just, man, it gets tough to watch sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, they're only 6.5 games back of the White Sox. That's quite a bit at this point in the season. I say only because they've got literally 130 games to play, and 19 of those are against the White Sox. You know, so they play the White Sox at the end of this month for the first time, and a 3-game sweep of the White Sox, assuming the status quo remains the same and they're still behind by 6.5 games, then all of a sudden you're behind by 3.5 games. You know, so things can shift very quickly, and it's good that the Royals know the issues they have this early in the season. Again, I guess if you're looking at a bright spot, they know what they need to fix.
And they have time to do it.
Yeah, better than, you know, if they would have won a game like last night 7-6, then instead of losing 10-7, then maybe you think, oh, okay, it's just a bad pitching performance, let's just kind of move on and chalk it up to whatever. And you don't necessarily address it right away, but they lost the game. So they did have to address it right away, and now they know moving forward. So hopefully, you know, maybe that's a good thing. And yeah, as you said, you know, the Royals were under 500 in July in 2014, and you know, the Mets last year had a stretch just about as bad as what the Royals have had this year. Mm-hmm. The Royals had a stretch last year about as bad as what they've had this year in late August, early September.
Yeah.
So, you know, they were 3-11, I believe. And just like they are now in this stretch, and they were about as putrid offensively. And I remember we were talking because we thought they were going to lose the home field advantage in the playoffs to the Blue Jays, and that was a big thing. And just like, uh-oh, the Royals are just coasting. They're going to be one and done in the playoffs, and they're, you know, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the rest is obviously history, yep. Quite literally. So, yeah, well, that's kind of that. So
that was depressing. Let's take a break and pick it up and lift the spirits.
Yes, that's what we'll do. So stick with us through the break. And then when we come back and see you on the other side, we'll lift your spirits with some positivity.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Bo Jackson says hello!
The Vault.
The Mondesi thing yesterday, what's the protocol with the players and how they're supposed to take, what they're supposed to take?
Well, you run into it in the off season, and when they're away from the club, they're supposed to report any type of medicines they take. So you get a prescription, it's got to be recorded. You're taking something over the counter, you just check with the trainers. In this case, he just didn't check with the trainers, and you know, unfortunately, it happens in the game, and this is one that, you know, stands out because he's a guy we count on. He's a good player, but you know, it's a tough lesson to learn for him, but hopefully he turn a positive into it with, you know, we warn the players all the time, and here's a case where somebody pays the price.
Okay, and then when he was gone a couple of days, was that he was back getting that, doing
no,
that?
No, he had he just had some soreness that we were giving him a couple of days, but we didn't know anything about it until yesterday afternoon, you know, early afternoon.
The stuff that he was taking, I think it was helped with asthma or something like that?
Yeah, I'm not familiar with it at all, yeah.
And then Ash Russell, have you guys looked at moving him up at all?
He's progressing, but right now I think we're set on just sending him the short season. You know, it's... you know, high school kids, we've had some, not many, that break right out of spring training, and we have some that go May 15th, and then some go short season. But right now it's looking like he'll be going to a short season, whether it's Burlington or Idaho Falls.
Okay, kind of a different season for Kansas City as a Kansas City native. There's a lot of big-name kids down there in the high school ranks. Mm-hmm. I mean, you guys probably aren't going to be in position to draft the two big names, but what do you think just of that talent down there?
Well, we like to think that it's a reflection of how baseball's growing in the area, and the interest in the game is great right now. I think there's some something to be said just for, you know, the way specialization's going in all sports, and now you got some kids that are concentrating on baseball and playing baseball year round. So it's good for the city. It's good for those kids. You know, like you said, I mean, they're depending on how well they finish up the season. You know, our position in the draft. You know, I can't say we've spent a whole lot of time on them only because where we anticipate that they'll go in the draft. But all in all, I think it's just a good step for the area, and hopefully just more motivation for kids in Kansas City to play baseball.
And then a couple guys here, Jorge Bonifacio, Brett Eibner, they're off to really good starts. Where do you see them in the organization?
Well, it's really good to see Bonnie coming here first time through AAA and respond the way he's responded. You know, he's you know, getting his hits. He's hitting for some power. We saw some power last year. We've seen him hit for average in the past. It looks like he's starting to put some things together. So that's a positive for him. And Brett just keeps doing what he's been doing, really. He had a great year last year, and he's picked up right where he left off. So swung the bat well here today, I thought, and squared some balls up. So it's good, you know, good for our organization to have guys that, you know, can go up there when needed. Same time, it's a competitive outfield, and, you know, it's that tough thing about AAA. They got to sort of wait their turn and be ready when the call comes.
It's springtime, which means two things: Royals baseball and the Westport Block Party. The fifth annual Westport Block Party is once again hosted by McCoy's and our friends at Kelly's Westport Inn. The Westport Block Party is May 29th, starting at 8 p.m., rain or shine, and tickets are just $10. And your ticket gets you access to a fun annual tradition of dancing in the streets and the best beers in town. And this year, your ticket gets you one drink on the house, and you even get to take home a souvenir event koozie. Come on out and hear Twice on Sunday as they mix the songs you love and have a drink on Kelly's. That is the Westport Block Party, May 29th, starting at 8 p.m. Follow Kelly's at Kelly's Bar KC on Twitter or visit kellyswestportinn.com for ticket details.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. What you heard there as we come back from the break was a little snippet from our far-flung correspondent, Clint Scholes. I frequent – I don't know if you know this about me, Mike. I'm quite a big movie fan.
I've heard that.
I say that. Have you heard that? Okay.
Once or twice.
So my all-time favorite writer is Roger Ebert, okay? Talking narrative writing, fiction writing, mm-hmm. sports writing, whatever. He's my all-time favorite writer. Anyway, when he had his own – he still has his own site. Obviously, he's dead, but it's still RogerEbert.com. But he had – when he was still alive even, he had the – he called them far-flung correspondents, which is mostly, you know, just bloggers or whatever who would occasionally contribute to his site with random articles about movies and film and that kind of a thing. So that's where that came from. But so, anyway.
Clint is our intrepid reporter on the scene. And
yes, very much so. So he's got some a snippet there from J.J. Piccolo about about the procedures that the Royals go through and – in situations like Raul Mondesi and what he, you know, how that situation could have been prevented. So,
little bit on other minor leaguers too. So, yes. You know, nice insight from the assistant general manager of the Kansas City Royals.
As always.
So thanks to Clint for picking that up for us and passing it on.
Indeed. So as promised, we have some positivity that we want to talk about, and should we start with the most positive, Mike, or should we go least positive and work our way up?
I guess let's work our way up. Let's let it build to a crescendo.
That's what I was gonna say, man. Sometimes we're Vulcan mind meld. We're a little close, I think, but a crescendo of positivity. So we'll start with the least positive. I don't know, that doesn't sound very positive at all.
Right, that sounds kind of awful.
It's a positive item anyway, so we'll say right. That. And it's Alcides Escobar. So he got off to what is a rather putrid start, and by any standards, not just his.
It's pretty typical, though. It's still Escobar. Yeah. But yeah. You know,
Escobar has never been a big on-base guy, but he's been able to make enough contact that you can still take him up there, because in that position he can make enough things happen. He can get some infield hits with his speed and things like that. But this year it has not been happening all that well. But the last week or so, he's kind of picked things up a bit. He had a 4-for-5 game in there, I believe. He had a 9-for-20 stretch overall. He's got on base a decent amount. Been doing pretty well. I mean, what do you see any changes from what Escobar has done that maybe makes you hope he can kind of right the ship and be a somewhat serviceable major league hitter?
Not really. I mean, it was at the start of the month, Craig Brown wrote up a thing at BP Kansas City about why Escobar needed to leave the leadoff spot. And you look at a guy like Escobar's profile, it's all batting average. If he's not making contact, he's not going to get on base, basically. And he's got to make good contact. So he hadn't done that through April. And then almost immediately after Craig posted this, Escobar went like 9 for his next 20. And so in the month of May, he's hitting .368. So, I mean, he is doing that part. And, you know, I'm not going to dog him for that. But I don't expect it to stay that way. I just don't. I mean, he is who he is. He doesn't have plate discipline. He's not going to walk. He doesn't have power, really. He can hit the occasional double and maybe 4 homers a year. And that's about it. That's your peak right there. You're basically hoping that he hits .280, so his on base is maybe .315. And, I mean, and that's what you're hoping for. And he's got to make enough contact.
It's unfortunate, but it's true.
It seems like his speed is down a tick, and I don't know if that's age or if he's still feeling the effects from Brett Lowry's greeting at second base last year in April, or if it's just one of those things. You know, it doesn't seem like he's getting quite the speed down the line that he always has. So I don't expect him to be able to continue something like what he's done recently. I think he's still going to settle into being a .250 hitter, maybe .260, get on base 29% of the time. definitely not suited to be a leadoff guy. Ned loves to have him there, and he led off most of last season. But, magic isn't real. And no matter what happened in the playoffs, that's something you can't expect to continue. And, that's the biggest kind of issue I find sometimes with the lineup. I guess you could point at this stretch that, okay, well, maybe it justifies it. But I really don't think that it's something that is going to be sustainable for him. So, I know we're supposed to be positive here. And the positive is that he has done well recently. And I could very much be wrong. I'm wrong quite often. So, And I hope to be wrong. I hope he hits 300 all season. That'd be awesome. But I would not put any money on it.
No. I think he's had one season where he's hit above 300. And after that, it's all been rather mediocre. And I think the profile that you described of contact heavy on base skills, meaning no on base skills besides contact.
Right.
That profiles out to a very good number nine hitter. And I think that is really Escobar's sweet spot because, after the start of the game, then the idea of setting the table with Escobar isn't really as important anymore because he could lead off the inning as the number nine hitter. You never know. Mm-hmm. But the only thing you're doing is you're giving him an additional at bat per game. Basically every hit that you get gives him an additional, or I shouldn't say that, but
it increases the odds that he's going to come up an extra time as opposed to somebody else.
As long as you don't get no hit, no one will have more at bats than him. So there's that. And well, I guess that's not necessarily true, but we're not going to need to get into
it's still, and it still works out over the season where, if that means that he's getting that extra at bat two or three times a week, well, that's 60 extra plate appearances over the course of the season. And it's just, if you're putting a guy there who's going to make an out 70, 71% of the time, that is not a good percentage play. And that's the biggest argument against it. It's that he's not an on-base guy and you're putting him in a position where he's going to affect more plate appearances than somebody else down the line, like Alex Gordon or even, Gerard Dyson perhaps, who, he's struggling, but I think you would accept that he's got a better eye. He has a little better ability to walk. And he's got more speed.
He's had pretty solid on-base skills despite his ability to not hit very well.
Yeah, he doesn't do much but hit singles, but, he can walk. He's not going to walk 3% of the time. He'll walk 7% of the time. And if all else is equal, that's not a bad spot. And if he gets on first base, he's going to get second. Escobar got thrown out stealing today, so it's not a guarantee. So it's just, I don't know. I don't like Escobar in that spot. If he's hitting ninth and playing his trademark defense, that's fine. But leadoff, it's a no-go for me.
His value has always been defensive. So when you're putting him in the one hole, then you're trying to assume he has that offensive value there, which over the course of his career, he has not demonstrated to a sufficient level. And it's something that it needs to change. I think he would be a great number nine hitter. And when he has hit ninth, he did for a short stint last year, and I think he has in previous years, it's actually quite nice because with his contact skills, when he does get on a hot streak, then you've got a number nine hitter who's setting the table for the top of your order.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you've got somebody on for your number one hitter who usually, if he's batting ninth, someone like Alex Gordon is hitting first. And Gordon has fantastic on-base skills, and we'll actually segue this into Gordon was our next kind of positive next rung on the positive ladder, if you will.
We're taking a step up.
Yes, and Gordon has, after a just, again, putrid start to the season, strikeouts galore, he's started to pick things up a little bit. He's starting to look a little bit more comfortable at the plate, starting to lay off some of those low and away pitches that he wasn't laying off early in the season, seeing the ball a little bit better. And just a random thought popped into my head. I wonder, not to say this is the reason or anything, but I wonder if there's any correlation between, because daylight savings time has started and the days will get longer as the summer goes on. I wonder if there's any correlation between hitters getting better, because there's kind of that magic hour that happens a lot during the games now, especially since the Royals have start games earlier now at home at 6 o'clock. So that visibility, I think, in that kind of right before the sun goes down, that dusk, it's mm-hmm. a lot worse. If you've ever seen the movie Reign of Fire, like
the dragon one,
yeah, with Christian Bale and Matthew McConaughey.
I've not seen
it. Oh man, I love that movie. I love dragons. Big surprise, right?
Right.
but love that movie. Anyway, so they have these dragons, and they're like, "We can't kill these things. What do? We just have to try and survive." And Matthew McConaughey rolls up, and he's like, "I killed one. How did you do it?" Well, he talks about magic hour. He's like, their eyesight is poor because, and they can't see at dusk. See, that's when you got to attack them because they can't attack you properly, right? So that could, I'd be curious to see if there's anything like that.
I'm just imagining Waterston saying that.
Waterston?
Isn't that the dude's name in Dazed and Confused?
Oh, his character's name. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, yeah. I can just see that they're driving. He's like, "Hey, y'all, I killed a dragon once. Here's what you do: we're folding beer cans into little people.
Gotta wait for that magic hour, man.
You go at him, and it's all right. Anyway,
M-A-G-I-C. Anyway, he's bald in the movie though, so he doesn't have. But he's got a thick beard, so it's almost like he's reversed his hair scenario from his, if you will. But
anyway, your theory.
That's just a random thought. I'm curious. I'd be curious to know if there's any kind of data on this, because that's, I mean, it is.
You could look at like first at bats and see how he does in that kind of spot, because that would be lined up with where that kind of hour would pop up.
Yeah, I don't know, but anyway, Gordon is starting to hit a little bit better, and the best thing about Gordon is even when he was struggling mightily and hitting hardly 200, he still had really good on base. Mm-hmm. And Alex Gordon has always had good on base skills, which is so odd, because for someone who strikes out as much as he does, even when he's not on a torrid pace like he is this year,
he's always been a strikeout guy. Franchise leader in strikeouts.
Yeah, but yet he's always still had pretty good on base skills. I mean, he's got a career 348 on base percentage, and he's hitting 234 right now, but a 344 on base. So you compare that to what you're talking about with Escobar, mm-hmm. where he might be hitting 250 and have a 290 on base.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, bump up 20 points of Gordon's batting average, and then a theoretical same bump to the on base percentage, he's almost in 370 range. So, and he had a 377 on base last year. So even when he struggles offensively, hitting the ball, he still finds ways to help the team. And a 344 on base percentage is one of those ways. So if you were to put him right now in the leadoff spot and switch Escobar down to the ninth and kind of shuffle it around like that, mm-hmm. I mean, even though they're both probably hitting roughly the same, I think Escobar is a 257 right now and Gordon's a 234 from a batting average standpoint. That extra base, Gordon is getting on an additional 10% of the time. So if, like you said, if he's, you know, at this point in the season, if he's had 60 extra at bats, then you're talking about six additional times that Alex Gordon has been on base over Alcides Escobar. So,
and six fewer outs.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's not nothing.
Yeah.
And who knows how many times Lorenzo Cain or Eric Hosmer has laced a double and
nobody's on base.
After that, it was a two out double and nobody was on, and the inning ended after that. You know, it could have been a run.
Yep.
But anyway, that's a good point to segue into the next higher rung on our positivity ladder. And the guy who gave me, if you will, a birthday serenade of baseballs. I'll pretend it was for me because how much I enjoy Lorenzo Cain. But yesterday, just a fantastic, it's an unbelievable game. three home runs, five RBIs. We talked about it at the beginning of the show. Don't need to rehash it. And, I mean, somebody threw up this obscene stat that I don't know where – I can't remember where it was from, but the record of teams playing in games where a player has hit three home runs is like 487, 89, and three. So back when you could tie in a baseball game and that was it.
Yeah, they're winning. It's like an 83% winning percentage or something like that.
It's obscene, and the Royals found a way to lose. So back to me, everything went right the last
two. And
they
hit a fourth homer even.
I mean, how many times, even if it's not three by one guy, how many times does a team hit four home runs and lose the game? I mean, just how they lost last night was unfreaking believable.
Yeah.
That's where you have to worry about the snowball effect of, man, what do we got to do?
Yeah, you can't do anything. It just
anyway, Lorenzo Cain had a fantastic game. He has really picked it up the last week or so. And kind of on a scorched earth thing, he's got two hits tonight. He just had a huge hit to get two RBIs. One hit tonight, two RBIs. He had a bases loaded single that scored two runs just now, right before we started talking about him. So the Royals have gone up 6-3 at this point. And he's now hitting .274 on the season is Lorenzo Cain from, you know, a week and 10 days ago when he was just hovering around that 200 point. So he's starting to heat up. He's starting to see the ball better. He's starting to have a better looking swing. I think he's kind of easing up a little bit and getting back to where he was last year in terms of comfortability, if that's a word. I think I got that one from you, Mike.
Oh, that one's from Lesky.
Oh, that's right.
That's a Lesky word. We'll count it.
That's all right.
Comfortability. So
he looks like he's getting a little bit of that back. I mean, I, for one, am pleased with what I'm seeing so far. Are you with me?
Yeah, and we saw a little bit of this on that road trip to the West Coast where he had been really struggling and was, you know, right behind Gordon in strikeouts. And then he started to kind of hit some flares the other way. Just, you know, a couple line drives to right, just kind of didn't do too much, just kind of got the bat on the ball and put it out there. And then he started to pull the line drives. And so then it started to kind of, I think that's where it all kind of like started to filter back in. He's got a 12-game hitting streak, 13 now after tonight's single. So coming into today in that streak, he was hitting .365, slugging .558. You know, he hadn't had a double. His last ex-brace hit until a double over the weekend was April. Like, it was April 27th or something. And it was that homer against the Astros. Maybe it was even earlier than that. So, you know, he hadn't been hitting much for power either. And now here he is, three homers in Yankee Stadium. One of them probably pretty cheap, but the other two were legit. And, you know, hit tonight. He's starting to kind of do something. And that's the important thing is that you've got, you know, we've talked about three guys who are hitting well right now. And for a while it was Hosmer and Moustakas and that was it. You had seven guys who weren't doing anything. And so now if you've got Cuthbert, who's hitting, you know, well enough to just be a guy there, if Dyson's going to get on and you get these three guys who we've talked about, who are starting to hit, who you expect to hit in the middle of the order, that's where that run production is going to be coming back. And, you know, the Royals have started to score some runs here and there. It's just they're playing catch up so often that it's difficult. But Cain is, yeah, he looks right back to where he should be, you know, right back to what you expect. And, you know, that's all it takes sometimes is one hot month to balance off a rough one to start the year.
It's true.
You just, you know, if he's his normal self the rest of the way, he's going to have maybe a slightly down year overall compared to last year, but it's still going to be a very good year. And, you know, I don't see, you know, I believe this is one of those stretches where we've seen Cain have two really good offensive years. You know, last year, obviously much better than 2014, but 2014 was very good too. So in this case, when he gets hot, I buy it a lot more than Escobar because the general components are there. He's got power. He's got, you know, more speed than Escobar. He makes better contact. He makes better choices at what he swings at, and he can walk. You know, he will take a walk every now and then, and guys will pitch around him too, and he knows that. So it's a situation where Escobar might chase a pitch because guys know he won't let it go. And Kane, you know, you can't always pitch around him because sometimes you have to come back into the zone, and that's where he can hurt you. And so that works out really well for Kane, and that's why I think it's more sustainable than Escobar, which is good because he needed to get back on track, and this lineup needed him to be producing, and now he is. And that's going to be the biggest factor in, the Royals kind of getting back on track, is guys like Kane and Gordon getting hits. And if Escobar wants to, hey, I'm not going to complain if he gets hits. If he hits 300, I'm cool. I'm fine. Again, I'm fine being wrong. So that's going to be okay for me. If the top five or six guys are hitting, I'm good. That's fine. So, and Kane's going to be a big part of that. And it looks like he's turning that back on.
Absolutely. And you kind of mentioned him, so we'll move into the top rung of the positivity ladder, Eric Hosmer, and probably not all that surprising given the fact that we've seen from him so far this season, everything you would expect. And I want to talk about a moment that I didn't see it. I was in my car and I heard it on the radio, but an at bat that Eric Hosmer had that I just really felt to me like he was taking that step into superstardom. And he was down in the count 0-2. There's a man on, and he worked the count back from 0-2 all the way to 3-2, full count, and then he blasts a home run. And that was one of those at bats where you're just like, man, that is a just legit pro superstar at bat. That's really tough to do, to get a pitcher to just battle him and at 0-2 and get it back to a full count and then get him throw you a meatball up there so you can take it out. I mean, I wish I would have seen it, but just even just hearing it on the radio, I was like, man, that was a fantastic at bat. And so I really think we're seeing Eric Hosmer. He's got 5 home runs now at this point, on pace for 25-ish on the season. He's hitting well above 300. I'm going to pull up his batting average really quick.
.331 after two hits today.
Okay, there you go. .331. And I mean, he's crushing the ball. He looks very confident at the plate. He's doing some very good things where when he sees, I think this might be when he would struggle in the past, some of his issues would be from trying to do his home run swing when it wasn't a home run pitch, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So, when he gets his arms extended and he has that sweet swing, it just looks very picturesque. Then, I mean, he just unloads on a baseball. And that's the kind of specialness that people were talking about. But his ability, when he falls in love with that, he gets in trouble. But he has a very good ability also, and he is very good. When you talk about people having very good hands, what Eric Hosmer's been able to do this season is what they're talking about, where he can shorten up his swing, he can get his hands through the zone quicker to get those balls where normally you might say, oh, he just got jammed and hits a little squibber. He's able to actually get decent wood on it and send it to the outfield and get a hit. And he's able to kind of change his swing path, change his swing dynamics, which is something I don't think he was as easily able to do for more than just spurts at a time in the past. And now I think he's really in a good place, really comfortable, to where he can get those hits in those scenarios. So then pitchers, they can't really pitch around him at all. And then his ability to have good pitch selection forces them to throw him a good ball every now and then, and he can take it out. I mean, I really think we're seeing Hosmer become a legit star in this league.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it, is that pitch recognition. It's knowing what ball you can hit out, what ball you can drive. And last year he had 18 homers, his career high is 19, so the homers haven't really been there, but when he hits them, they're 400 plus feet nearly every time. He's got opposite field power, legit to all fields power. And that's what makes it so just like tantalizing to watch him, because he is, I think last year he was like a top 5 guy in average home run distance. It's just, he didn't hit that many homers. And I think some of that is because he hits a lot of ground balls. He started this year hitting a ton of them.
But when he gets that ball elevated, you know, 20-some percent of the time it leaves the yard. And it's just incredible power. It's just, it doesn't come on display that much. But last year he had an increase in walks. He had a good amount of power. He makes good contact. You know, he's not afraid to take it the other way. And he is getting better at bats. And if you have a good at bat and you put yourself in position to make a pitcher come to you at, you know, if you lay off a pitch in the dirt on 1-0, it's 2-0 now. And now you can narrow down the selection a little bit more and kind of sit on the fastball. And if it's not in the location you want, you let it go. And he's got the confidence to let it go. And he's got the confidence to let it fly when it's where he wants it. And that's when he hits the ball hard. And, you know, it's really encouraging. I mean, last year at the same time, he had about the same slash line. And he kind of, you know, dwindled down a little bit. But he still had a really good year. He's still at 290 and almost career high in homers. He was, you know, just a strong player and a strong hitter all around. So I think those gains last year and just the confidence he has right now, that seems legit to me. And it seems like he's really coming into his own. This year, he's got a hit in 27 to 32 games. He's been on base in 30 of 32. That's coming into today. I mean, he got a hit today, two hits today. So make that 28 to 33 and 31 to 33. So, I mean, he's always on base. He's hitting the ball hard. He's hitting it all fields. You can't really shift on him. And, you know, right now he's on pace to set a career high in home runs. That is legitimate stuff right there. I mean, he's right there in that first part of his peak. It's entry-level peak Eric Hosmer. And we just hope that, you know, this year and next year are still that peak. And he just continues to build on it. And maybe it's that mythical 300, 400, 500 kind of line.
Oh man, 300, 400, 500 with 25 home runs and 100 RBIs. I mean, he
and
would
gold
be
glove.
Getting
that's,
and a gold glove.
That's top five MVP territory.
I mean, easily what I mean, if you look at, and if he can do well over those things, you know, if he can go, I don't see him as someone who would go too far over 400 on base percentage, but if he can hit 330 with the 400 on base and maybe like a 520 slugging or something, and then you know, hits 25, maybe he extends it to 30 home runs and right around 100, right around 100 RBIs. I mean, with that gold glove, I mean, depending on the types of seasons that are had, I mean, if the Royals come back and they're, you know, one of the better teams in the AL again, then it'd be hard not to give him the MVP, you know, unless someone has just an insane season. That would be an insane season.
That's where you get into the argument of MVP versus best player.
Yeah.
Because Trout's still got the, he's until someone knocks him off, he's the favorite for MVP, but the Angels are terrible.
Yeah.
And they're not going to get better.
No.
It's so weird. Did we talk about the article on Baseball Prospectus where someone went through and they talked about, like, if each team had drafted Mike Trout, how much better it makes them?
No, that's an awesome idea for an article, though.
They basically took every team that passed on him in the first round, and they were like, okay, here's
like
a
26 of them or whatever.
Where was he? I think he was drafted 19th,
27. Was it that? I thought it was in the 20s, but either way.
Yeah, a lot of teams. Not every
Royals
team. Royals were one of them. Royals took Aaron Crow that year.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, and they projected it, and nearly every team had like 10 wins better over, you know, each of three seasons. And when you think about it, you think about the Angels. They have Mike Trout. And what have they done? They've gotten swept out of the playoffs one year.
They had one year they were the best team in American League, and the Royals took them to task.
Yeah.
Mike Trout had one hit. Granted, I think it was a home run.
It was a home run, yeah. It was
one hit the entire series.
I mean, what are they doing?
God, I couldn't.
And they have no farm system right now. They have
They traded it all for Zach Greinke for a half season that they didn't even do anything with.
They have nothing. I mean,
because was it John Segura, right?
And then, yeah, they traded Segura and John Helwig for for Greinke in 2011. Yeah, 2011. Because the Brewers got him. Well, was it? No, it was 2012.
Just got him in 2010.
They got him after 2010 for 2011. And I think he played that full season because they made the playoffs. The Brewers made the playoffs in 2011. So, yeah, it would have been middle of 2012.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was on the Dodgers.
Yeah, he signed with the Dodgers right after that.
So he was.
He was a free agent after
3 years on the Dodgers.
Yeah.
I think he was only there 2 years. Beside the point.
I don't know. Anyway.
Beside the point.
Anyway, Mike Trout's going to win the MVP, but he's not going to be the most valuable player because that team's no good.
Yes.
So, I mean, it is. It's the best player award. But if Hosmer does what is, you know, reasonable for him, yeah, I mean, he'd be in that discussion. Especially if the Royals make the playoffs, especially if he's a driving force for them to kind of get back on task and overtake the White Sox like, you know, we hope and expect.
Yeah. So there you go, folks. We have climbed the rungs of the ladder of positivity after wallowing in, you know, for those who listen to the show know I'm a recent entrant into the world of fatherhood, and I changed my baby's diaper earlier before we came on the show, and it was full of crap in the most literal possible sense you could imagine. And as a result, it made me think of the way the Royals were playing, and that's what we discussed in the first part of the show.
It's but full we of climbed Chris Medlin starts.
Yeah, that's right. We climbed up out of it, and here we are talking about a world where Eric Hosmer is possibly American League MVP. So let's hope that he is, but I would take last year's scenario where nobody wins MVP and they win a World Series instead.
Sure. Yeah. I'll take six guys who are really, really good all season.
Yes. That's all day cool long. Maybe that's a topic for another show. We've kind of been tossing that around lately. Just the idea of how good would a team be if you had, you know, instead of a team like the Angels, where even when they signed
two superstars and
then the rest
and Drek
average. But if you just had how many average guys versus superstar and all that kind of stuff. Interesting topic. Maybe when there's a slower time in the Royals season, which maybe not. But anyway, that's what we'll leave you with on this evening. So hopefully the Royals can pull out a win here against New York, get one game closer to 500, and then maybe they can start a little run here if they want. We got Ian Kennedy's pitching tomorrow night. So if they can win tonight, maybe Kennedy pitches another solid game. They get two in a row. They're back to 500.
They come Things home.
They come home.
Against the Braves.
Against the putridly awful Braves. Ned Yost bobblehead night this weekend. So, I mean.
And dress to the nines. So
that's right. Dress to the nines. I almost forgot.
That'll be Sunday. So, yeah, after you listen to this episode, go listen to Bob Kendrick from last week.
So they win tonight, and then they win tomorrow. They sweep the Braves. Why not? And then they'll be, was that 19 and 17? They sweep the Braves?
Right. They'll be 20-17 if they win tonight, tomorrow, and sweep the Braves.
That's right. Tonight, tomorrow, and sweep the Braves. That's right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, 20-17. I'll take that. That definitely puts them.
After a 3-11 stretch, that'll be fine with me.
So, all right. Well, with that, we'll leave you. And as always, guys, thanks. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. Thanks so much for the interaction on Twitter, everywhere else. We love to hear from you guys. Love that you listen to this show. Drop us a line. Let us know if you like it, if we're idiots, everything. You know, we're open to it all. So thanks, everyone, so much for listening. For Michael Engel, I am Jeff Hurd. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to KansasCityBaseballVault@gmail.com.